and the newly released The Returning Citizens. Listen Tuesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. In case you missed the show, stream it later at WPFWFM.org on our archive, or subscribe to Crossroads on iTunes and Google Play Music. On your station for jazz and justice, WPFW Washington.
To Heal DC. This is Joni, and Chuck is with us for a little bit today. Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Joni.
We are going to be spending the hour today on DC Emancipation Day, and we are blessed and thankful to have what some people call the godfather of DC Black history. And he's a very modest godfather. That is C.R. Gibbs. And hopefully all of you listeners know who C.R. Gibbs is. If you don't, I suggest you check him out on Wikipedia or one of those things. But I'll just briefly say that he is the author of 6 books, including Georgetown Remembered, A History of Its Black Community, From the Founding of So-Called George to the Present. Another very interesting thing he's done for HUT-TV, Sketches in Color, a 13-part companion series to PBS series on the Civil War. And I'd like to see that again. He is, of course, very much our historian on WPFW, definitely part of the WPFW family, and he's really the people's historian for at least Washington, D.C., if not beyond. And, of course, this time of year, he's a very busy person. We're thankful he can be with us this morning to talk about D.C. Emancipation Day. Later on in the hour, we'll be joined by Frank Smith with the African-American Civil War Museum. But welcome, Mr. Gibbs.
Good morning, Joni.
Glad to
see you. Good morning, Chuck.
Morning.
C.R., for those people who, well, actually, we're going to start with a little music to set the tone, if we're ready. We're going to be hearing this throughout the show.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory.
And Mr. C.R. Gibbs, we thought that was set the tone for today. For those people who do not know the history of D.C. Emancipation Day, you can start us out, and you can talk for most of the hour without us even jumping in.
Well, a good morning to our listeners, and again, critical that we understand, and I sometimes worry that we don't, the importance of emancipation in the nation's capital. This set the tone and standard for what would happen in the rest of the country. I make the statement that had there been no D.C. emancipation, there might not have been a Juneteenth, there might not have been an Emancipation Proclamation. Why? Because no one knew that this was going to work. There were powerful forces arrayed against freedom for Black people in the nation's capital. One example would be what amounts to, they would call it the city council. The city council issued a statement saying they did not want Black people in the nation's capital. They were a population undesirable everywhere in the country. The feeling that Lincoln and a handful of others had was that if there was one place that the government had to end slavery, the one place they had authority to do so, it would be the District of Columbia. But there were, as I said, powerful forces that said, no, that's not going to work. Even I mentioned in one of my other books, Black, Copper, and Bright, the District of Columbia's Black Civil War Regiment, which I might take a moment to say is the first book of its kind on the Black Civil War Regiment from the District of Columbia, that even Lincoln himself was of more than one mind about it, because as he told Senator Orville Babcock, he said, well, if we do freedom, are we going to have enough servants in the nation's capital? So there was that concern. There was also the idea of freedom. Now, there was a freedom on a state level in a handful of states, but there were many other places where this was not, it was simply not going to be. And to get it through in the nation's capital, to show that it was possible and that Black people were ready, was a dangerous experiment. Some of us approach the history as though we already knew it was going to happen, that somehow it was baked in that this was a sure thing. It was not. It took some 60 years from the time of the time, at least the city becoming the nation's capital. There was constant struggle for Black people to get their freedom. When we talk about it being handed to us, we forget that there were attempted slave rebellions, partly because it's not taught. The trail from slavery to freedom in the nation's capital is not taught. The fact that there was a Black Civil War regiment in the DC schools is not at all well known. We tend to think it happened somewhere else, south of the Mason-Dixon line, when we know that there was the Underground Railroad existed here, that there is the story of a young brother who was taken into a blacksmith shop in the nation's capital and tortured until he gave up what he knew. But he didn't know that much or claim not to know about that much. He told him, well, I think it's a train that goes underground and it goes north. Well, the folk who were doing the torturing in a blacksmith shop in the District of Columbia already knew that much. So the fact that they put his fingers, crushed his fingers in a vise, and any of you that are familiar with an old-time blacksmith shop from watching Westerns know there's every kind of tool that can be turned into a pain infliction device existed in one of those hellish places. And the history of this, that is to say the physical history, is not yet gone. If you were able to walk with me to the corner of Georgia and Eastern Avenue in the Blair Jessup Park, there's a large sign right there, right on Georgia Avenue, about something that happened the night of August 8th, 1850. D.C. was full of people who desired freedom and equally full of people who were determined to take it back from us. On that night, a carriage is hurrying from D.C. toward Maryland. They are stopped by bounty hunters. They're stopped by people who want to bring back the two passengers inside the coach. because they're not simply field hands. They are the prized enslaved people of two of the most powerful politicians on Capitol Hill. They've got to bring them back. They've got to find them. And in order to prevent the... I'm sorry.
Chuck, please mute your phone. I'm sorry, Mr. Gibbs. Keep going.
That's all right. And in order to prevent that, the people who were in favor of slavery decided that they would set up a network of informants. Again, we're talking D.C. was essentially filled with slave plantations. They had people. They were slave labor camps enforced rigidly by a city system aided by the federal government that had a number of ways of making freedom difficult. That story somehow, I worry, is not getting told. People are focusing on fireworks and they're focusing on a concert and they're not focusing on the fight, the incredible resistance put up by Black people in this city, that we have our own heroes, that we have the conductors on the Underground Railroad. As I said earlier, we have attempted slave rebellions in the district. There were people who in the 1830s swore that every time they saw a fire off in the distance, some freedom-seeking Black person had said it. There was, I recall, in one of the reminiscences by David Crockett, some of you may be familiar with him, that they could, there was a fire in Georgetown that they could see from the Capitol. And some of the people were certain that freedom-seeking Black folk had said it. We do know that there was an attempted slave rebellion in Georgetown in the early 1800s. Again, these stories are not told. It's not just party with a purpose, if you want to call it that. It is the story of struggle. It is the story that is undergirded by faith and by scripture, by the natural desire of people to be free, that has to be told alongside the story of what happened on Capitol Hill when they signed papers. We know that Black folk were already running away, already striking a blow at freedom before anybody sat down to write the D.C. Emancipation Act. Talking about West India emancipation, Frederick Douglass said they wanted to show that Black folk were not hugging their chains, that we did not want to be in the condition that we were. So if you go back with me to the corner of Georgia and Eastern and pull off to the side and look at what happened on that glorious night in 1850, the bounty hunters were in such a lust to capture us that they put a rail through the back wheels of the carriage. They stabbed the doors of the coach. They fired into the coach trying to get these two Black men and return them to slavery. Obviously, they pulled the driver, who was a well-known white abolitionist, William Chaplin, pulled him down off the seat and hurled him to the ground. So they were able finally to get one of them. One was wounded and fled, but came in a few days later. These are the stories, again, of resistance that we must tell while we're having a good time with the fireworks and the concert. I'm not against those, but we need to balance it out with more education.
Yes.
The stories we need to tell of resistance and courage, of daring do and amazing resolve. This is also part of the DC emancipation story. And we would not have the emphasis we have today had it not been for Loretta Carter Haynes and her son, Peter Haynes. They gave countless hours. Some would even say they gave their lives on behalf of the necessity of telling the story of our freedom. In many cases, in many homes in the nation's capital, they know how freedom was arrived at in other places, but don't know how it came about here.
Yes.
And the fact that there are still reminders of that inglorious time of slavery and bondage that still stand in the nation's capital. One very quick one. I mean, you may have figured out about the U.S. Capitol or the White House, but I'm not talking about those. One of the oldest privately owned houses on Capitol Hill, a few steps from the Eastern Market Metro, was a slave plantation called the Maples. And we know from there that even before, as early as 1795, a man named William Maine Duncanson had built this estate right on Capitol Hill and had enslaved people in the, I looked at the blueprint for the Maples, and they had quarters set aside for enslaved people right on Capitol Hill. And we haven't even got to Southwest yet. You know, the institution of bondage was woven in economically and socially into the fabric of the city. So until we tell those stories, until we understand how our ancestors subverted the very designs of some of the most powerful people in the United States, we do not yet have a full appreciation for what we're celebrating and what we celebrated yesterday.
Absolutely. And Mr. Gibbs, if you could spend a minute telling people, because there are some listeners who may not know about Loretta Haynes, and of course Peter Haynes, who we just lost last year, but tell the listeners what Loretta Haynes did, and then followed by her son, to really help to make sure there is a D.C. Emancipation Day.
It still remains one of the honors of my life to work with Loretta Carter Haynes, the grandmother of D.C. Emancipation, and her son, Peter, who, as Joni said, we lost a great, tremendous loss to the city. These folks worked tirelessly to keep the story of D.C. Emancipation alive in the public mind. We would not have what we have today had it not been for Loretta Carter Haynes and Peter Haynes. I've never seen people who work so tirelessly in spite of any infirmities that they may have had. Nothing could surmount their dedication to telling the hidden story of freedom in the District of Columbia. What led to the celebration that we have today? And they sort of moved it along from celebration to celebration. What I mean is it went from a private holiday after years and years of effort to a public holiday that we celebrate today. But they collected stories. They met with people. They were tireless lobbyists for this history that until that time, few people knew. And it was my, again, honor to write an article for the Washington Post in April of 1985 about D.C. emancipation. And Mrs. Haynes read that, and that gave her further fuel for her crusade to tell this story. Again, there are people who are more aware that about freedom coming to Black people in other places than they ever were about freedom coming to where they live and walk and work.
Absolutely.
We understand that D.C. emancipation is important nationally, internationally. And how can we say that? Well, because with freedom finally having been, after some, I dare say, 60 years of effort, we began to see a crack in the wall, starting with D.C. emancipation, April 16th, 1862. Now understand, again, until that time, I want to emphasize, freedom was vapor-like. It was a distance. It was fog. We could not grasp it yet. But through a variety of circumstances, when it happened, and we talk about April 16th. Let me briefly tell you the story of April 15th, because as news got out that Lincoln was going to sign the legislation, black folks began to knock on his door more than ever. One of the great faults of the motion picture Lincoln was that he did not show, it showed plenty of black folk working for the Lincolns at the White House, didn't show how they came to lobby. It didn't show how in the spring of the 1862, Lincoln himself understood that part of, if he was already leaning toward freedom, he was also leaning toward us not enjoying it in the United States of America. There were people who knocked on the White House door, the great AME prelate Daniel Alexander Payne visited Lincoln, wanted to make sure that he was still certain that he was still going to sign the paperwork for DC emancipation. It was always on tenterhooks until Lincoln signed that paper. Again, we didn't know, it was not guaranteed. But once the paperwork was signed, and again, even before, I said April 15th, because there was a unique event in a black church in Georgetown on the evening before DC emancipation. We know that church in those days to have been Ebenezer. Today, that is a fantastically successful church in the suburbs, but its roots go back to Ebenezer, the stone of hope. And that evening, the evening before DC emancipation, this man who was an AME prelate, a multi-genius, a scholar of the first rank, Bishop Daniel Alexander Payne, stepped to the podium and reminded black people that who were already free coming from other states north of the Mason-Dixon, that black people had a responsibility to those who were about to be newly free, and that they should be aware of the forces that were arrayed against them as well, so that when the day happened, when DC emancipation took place the next day, we would know what to do, and we would step forward with a unique and united response. One black citizen wrote to a friend in Baltimore, "This has indeed been a happy day to me. Sights I have witnessed that I never anticipated." And then he described how he gave the happy news once the paperwork had been signed to two female friends of his, one of whom had a slave son. And he said, "You know, when I entered the room, they perceived that something was ahead and immediately asked me, 'What's the news?' 'The district's free,' says I, pulling out the National Republic and reading its editorial. When I finished, the chambermaid left the room sobbing for joy. The slave woman clapped her hands and shouted, left the house saying, 'Let me go tell my husband that Jesus has done all things well.' While the cook, who is free, retired to another room to offer thanks for the blessing sent." The author of the letter says, "Should I not feel glad to see so much rejoicing around me? Were I a drinker, I would get on a jolly spree today. But as a Christian, I can but kneel in prayer and bless God for the privilege I've enjoyed this day. Would to God that the law applied also to Baltimore, but a little patience and all will be well." See, this hits you on a visceral level when you understand what it meant to people in the nation's capital. The Anglo-African, a black newspaper published in New York City, described it this way: "It was a fitting celebration of the anniversary of Fort Sumter that Congress should pass a bill to emancipate the capital from the thrall of slavery forever. Henceforth, whatever betide the nation, its physical heart is freed from the presence of slavery." it would be the success of DC Emancipation, because they were those who were predicting black folks were going to go on a murderous spree, that they weren't ready for freedom, that they weren't prepared. They weren't even human beings. The city had council had already said, we don't want y'all to be free. And in the wording of the DC Emancipation, there was, of course, the little thing that's sometimes not told is that, well, if these black folk are going to be freed, they're going to go somewhere else. We're going to send them to Haiti. We're going to send them somewhere, but we're not going to let them be free here in the nation's capital. So all of this is in play. But once the success was assured that black folks did not go on some sort of crazy bloodlust, it made it possible and in quick order to anticipate freedom more realistically in other parts of the country. Here's what I mean. DC Emancipation, April 16, 1862. Now I'm going to give you another day. It's going to sound like another day, but stay with me. So we go from April 16th, 1862 to June 19th, 1862. Stay with me. That is freedom for black people in the federal territories, in the federal territory. No, we ain't at Juneteenth yet. Hold on. So we've got emancipation in the district. The success of emancipation in the district in April leads to the end of slavery in the federal territories, in the far west. But we're not done yet. Okay, we're June of 1862. In September, Lincoln signs the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. Haven't heard of that one? September 22nd, 1862. Preliminary Emancipation Proclamation. In other words, I'm getting ready to do something. I'm putting y'all on notice. I know there most people don't want it to happen, but it's going to happen anyway. And then we have January 1st, 1863, the Emancipation Proclamation. But even with that, there are places in the country that don't want black freedom. And so federal troops have to ensure when they land in Galveston, Texas, that, because that's what it takes. It takes the full armed strength of the federal government to enact the end of slavery in the state of Texas. I do know that there are people who believe that that was the end of slavery in the United States. Juneteenth was not. There was still slavery in a number of states. People were still being bought and sold in a number of states as June 1865. The job was not completely done. We still needed to have the 13th Amendment to shut this down, as imperfect as the 13th Amendment is and was. But we needed to have that because slavery lurked. And I want to include one other date, and that's November 1864, we have freedom in Maryland, because up until that time, Maryland was a slave state. And have you thought about it? Had DC remained, Virginia had taken its part of the district back in the 1840s, but had we stayed in Maryland, we would not have been freed until November of 1864. Maryland law prevailed. So, you know, all of these things must come into consideration when we talk about DC Emancipation. That was the first step in a process that would lead to the end of widespread enslavement in the United States. But it began here. It began here. And we need to, when people say first freed, that's what they mean. And again, it set in motion a chain of events that would lead to the end of enslavement.
And
we understand that there was such joy in the black community. Even the Christian Recorder, the official organ of the AME Church, said that here in Washington, in their April 26, 1862 edition, here in Washington, the heel of Providence stamps on the head of the serpent in our political Eden, the accursed corrupter of those who once bore the image of God, but seem now to have lost it almost utterly, if not forever. No wonder the head being thus trampled underfoot, that the loosened and squirming coils of the monster writhing through all the South manifested so strongly that the spreading pangs of death. All hail the day of emancipation here. All hail the day of prospective emancipation everywhere. Aha, thou rattlesnake slavery, art thou at last humbled in the dust? Would thou could suffer as thy victims, both white and black, have suffered? Freedom, all hail. All hail the 16th day of April, 1862, the first day of freedom in the District of Columbia, in the capital of our republic. All hail, with thanksgiving to God and gratulations to mankind. All hail, with special gratulations to those who now stand up, redeemed, regenerated, and disenthralled. Fair shines the morning star.
And you are listening to Mr. C.R. Gibbs. He is the godfather of D.C. Black history. And we are proud to have him be part of our WPFW family. We're spending the hour talking about D.C. Emancipation Day. This is To Heal D.C. with me, Joni, and with Chuck. And we're going to, in a few minutes, we're going to hear from Frank Smith, but we're going to hear a little music and we turn right away to Mr. Gibbs.
The pair of Apollo's center, where the flag is waving bright, we are going out slaving, we are bound for freedom of life. We mean to show Jeff Davis how the Africans can fight as we go.
Mr. Gibbs, we wish we could have you on all day long to talk about this important history.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Joni. It's again, I'm so grateful that you provided the time for me to share this little known history. I'm glad as well, and I know you'll probably say it on your show later on, but April 23rd at the Woodridge Library at 6 o'clock, I will give the forgotten history of D.C. emancipation. Again, at 6 o'clock at the Woodridge Library at 18th and Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. So, you know, come out if you want to know the hidden history of enslavement in the nation's capital. If you want to know the hidden history of resistance, I'm sure some of you were surprised when I mentioned what attempted slave revolts in D.C. and in the area around the, yeah, yes, we did all that. So
absolutely. And I would encourage listeners to check out Mr. Gibbs at that. Those library presentations are extremely inspiring. And it's a packed house always. So again, that's next Tuesday, a week from tomorrow. Mr. Gibbs, at what time?
Yeah, April 23rd at the Woodridge Library. Not Woodbridge, Virginia.
Right.
Woodridge in Northeast D.C. at 18th and Rhode Island Avenue, 6 o'clock.
Absolutely. And you'll meet a lot of WPFW listeners there, always come. So, perhaps you may want to share now, or you could share it later, what you're going to be doing tomorrow, where the listeners might check you out.
I will be, courtesy of the wonderful group of committed sisters, we'll be at the for a ceremony on DC emancipation at 11 o'clock. I believe the building is called Enlightenment, and right at the, right off the intersection of Martin Luther King and Marion Barry. And we'll be there talking about DC emancipation. I'll also talk about not just the story of Black folks crossing the bridge from Maryland to the District of Columbia, but this is one of the few times that I'll be talking about a naval squadron called the Potomac Flotilla and its role in Black freedom, the role of Black sailors who fought in that remarkable story of people coming up from the tributaries of the Potomac and the other nearby rivers, sailing through Confederate snipers and artillery, coming into the district, where, as it turns out, once they spend time at the Navy Yard, they will blend into the communities of Navy Yard and Capitol Hill and another up-and-coming location, Barry's Farm. So these are things we always don't necessarily put together the pieces, but the experts say thousands of Black folk came out of slavery's misery in Maryland and in Virginia. They were able to get on the Union gunboats while in many cases they were still being shot at by Confederate snipers whose mission was to cut off water access to the nation's capital. So all of this is, again, part of the story that doesn't get out that would result in our freedom and in a measure of security.
You said cut off access, water access. Can you?
Yes. There were Confederate gun batteries as close as Aquia Harbor. For those of you that know that area, there were Confederate guns at what we now call Quantico, and they were aimed toward the river. They were aimed toward the river to stop these Black people from escaping and getting to D.C. They also wanted to prevent the federal gunboats from operating in that area. There were battles. In fact, Joni, the first Union naval officer to be killed in the Civil War was part of the Potomac Flotilla. So I'm trying to say this was no joke. This was not something that they did not give thought to. There were struggles in all of those rivers that empty into the Chesapeake Bay. There were battles in those waters as well. And Black people embraced this opportunity for freedom. They would, when it was safe, stop the Confederate vessels, say, you know, take us on board, get us out of here. Not that the Navy wanted to do that at first. There was a tremendous resistance, but Black folk kept on at it. And as we did, the Union Navy resolved and soon learned, well, wait a minute, these Black folk can tell us information about where the Confederates are. Who are these people that are shooting at us? What about their small boats? And they provided information on smuggling. This whole area was rife with smuggling money and goods to the Confederacy. Along with weapons, Black folk who aided the Potomac Flotilla were able to provide information to limit that. And by some accounts, the number of brothers who fought in the Union Navy in the Potomac Flotilla may have been as high as a third of the entire force. And again, people they don't talk about that. So come and you know, I'll tell you a few more stories. So when you come tomorrow, yes, Black people crossed the Navy Yard Bridge, and it was a wonderful event, Freedom's Crossing, some people have called it. there is one of DC's newest Black History plaques right there on Marion Barry, the old Good Hope Road, right up from the intersection of Martin Luther King. And you can read this beautiful plaque. The work of Adasi is astounding, as well as the owner of the building who had the courage and foresight to permit it to be, for the plaque to be attached to his building. Just a wonderful story. And so there will be representatives from Adasi and a number of other community and consciousness groups. So come on out 11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And that's it.
And see what's going on in your community.
Yes, 1205 Marion Barry Avenue Southeast. And as Mr. Gibbs just said, there are going to be quite a number of other speakers. And the theme of it is Black Liberation Struggles in Global Africa Then and Now. So that's going to be quite an amazing event tomorrow, Tuesday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 1205 Marion Barry Avenue. Again, you are listening to Heal DC with Mr. C.R. Gibbs. We wish we could have him on all day long today, but we have him on for about 15 more minutes. And we are now joined by another hero when we come to this issue and other issues as well, and that is Mr. Frank Smith, who is the founder of the D.C. African American Civil War Museum, a former city council person, and of course a SNCC veteran and a SNCC activist. And Chuck is with us still too. Chuck, if you want to jump in with a question or comment, please do. But let me ask Frank, and of course, people who have listened to PFW or have visited, for those of you who have not visited the museum, it's being expanded. It'll be reopening in the fall, but is one of the definite treasures of Washington, D.C. And Frank, as we're listening to CR talk about what happened in 1862, and again, the Civil War was not officially over, you certainly have committed a great deal of your life to make sure that people know the role that Black people played in the Civil War, which, of course, is another, no surprise, it's a secret to many. It's not taught in the schools, etc. But welcome, Frank.
Hey, good morning, and good morning to my dear friend, C.R. Gibbs. It's always a pleasure to hear you. You got a magic way of doing these presentations that keep everybody spellbound, so they pay attention to you, including me. I always learn something new every time I hear you speak. So congratulations and thank you very much. You and I are fellow travelers in a sense, because we've been talking about this so long now. We were talking about these stories. Nobody paid them any attention. They're getting a little more attention now. Thank God for that. And thank God for all your hard work, too, on this.
Thank you, Brother Frank.
Yeah. So let me, I just wanted to add two things to it. One is that that we have a young fella here that you see in uniform all the time named Marquette Milton. His stage name, I might say, is Andrew Green. his stage name. He calls himself a living artifact. But we wanted to have somebody in a uniform who would let people have a visual image of what one of these soldiers might look like. So Marquette found us when he was in high school, actually. And he went into the records here at the archives, pulled out the name of Andrew Green, and he took on the persona of Andrew Green. Andrew Green was one of the first free. He was one of these people whose name is on this list of 3,100 who was freed by in that compensated amount. Actually, I think they paid $300. To the owner of Andrew Green. So Andrew Green, they didn't give Andrew Green any money. They gave him his freedom, but they gave his owner $300, which they paid the owner $300 for Andrew Green. And Andrew Green, but he didn't just sit on his freedom. He didn't just sit on his freedom and say, well, I got mine. Y'all get y'all's. I got mine. I'm headed out here down my freedom. Leave you guys alone. Y'all get your own freedom. Andrew Green joined the Union Army. He took his newfound freedom and joined the Union Army. And he became a member of the first USCT, and he's in your book, CR. You know that already. Some of this information we get on him, we got from your book that you did on the first USCT. And but Andrew Green is a story we like to tell because we want people to know that these were real people. These weren't just names on a wall. These weren't just names of folk got plucked out of the air. And once they got that newfound freedom, they didn't just, as they say, can all you get and sit on the can all you can get. He didn't sit on his can, and none of them did. Because they knew that they had relatives who were still enslaved. So I lift up the name of Andrew Green this morning. Because that's what you and I, that would have been us, CR, you and me and Chuck Hicks, all of us would have been Andrew Green. We would have said, okay, let's go find some other freedom fighters who want to get their freedom. Because we know at the end of the day, the only way this Confederacy is going to be defeated is that African Americans are going to have to put on some uniforms. They're going to have to walk out on those battlefields. They're going to have to take some of these bullets. They're going to have to sacrifice their lives like everybody else. They're going to have to get shot at. They're going to have to get sick, and they're going to be wounded. And not only that, but you won't be surprised to hear that in some cases, these guys had bullets of one caliber and rifles of another caliber. They didn't even have proper weaponry because they didn't, in the beginning, they were scared these guys weren't going to fight. They didn't know what.
Did we lose Frank? Okay. Maybe we should use the old fashioned telephone.
A free man gets married and has a family here in D.C. So it's a wonderful story. It's one of the things that we do to tell this story. And I just want to lift Andrew Green up this morning in about 2 minutes here on your show, Mr. Gibbs. And I'm finished now unless you have some questions for me.
How about is there anything that you're doing tomorrow that the listener should know about?
Yes, we are. You know, we have an annual program here to recognize these people who were freed. We like to call their names out loud. And so a few of us will gather here at the African American Civil War Memorial tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. And we will read off these names, just call them out loud. People say if you call out somebody's name, they will never die. We lift their names up every year to say to them, thank you very much for being pioneers. And not only for being pioneers, but for giving us Andrew Green. So we could have this, so we could eventually end slavery, get the 14th Amendment, which makes us citizens. And then the 15th Amendment, which gives African American men the right to vote. And you all know we're still fighting over these issues right now. Mm-hmm. That's one interesting thing about this as C.R. Gibbs and I and you all at WPFW go through life, you realize, as we come up today on this election that's coming up here in the fall, people and the president is saying democracy is on the table here. The right to vote is on the table here. So these issues don't ever go away, it seems. We're always going to be out here fighting for freedom and for democracy and the dignity of man and woman in such a way that we can all be equal in this society. It's an interesting time to be living in. It's a stressful time in a sense, but we're up to it. We were built to fight. We know how to fight. We know how to survive. We know how to walk these streets and walk these waterways, ride these waterways, and take these airways and use them for freedom and for democracy. And so, tomorrow morning we'll be reading these names out loud. We invite the public to come out. It's really we get about 25 or 30 people reading these names all at one time. It sounds like we're singing. It sounds like a mighty chorus. It's a mighty chorus of names, 3,100 names. So come out and join us. If you get a chance, if you're in Northwest and you don't want to go all the way out to Southeast, join us at the African American Civil War Memorial at the corner of Vermont Avenue and U Street. And you know this memorial, CR, you know that we are just now recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records as the monument with more names than any other monument in the world.
Wow.
You know, we go from the time of obscurity when people didn't even believe us when we started talking about this at first. Now we got this thing, got a national recognition for this thing.
Yes.
So we're in the stratosphere now, telling this story all around the world. Come and see these soldiers who helped change America, helped get rid of slavery and make this country a country where we could all live. And make it worth fighting for us. Really, it wasn't worth fighting for us when we were enslaved. Once we get our freedom, then we got a little skin in the game. We're willing to get in there with these other wars. You know, we have a World War I and World War II, Korean War. And our people are in the military now because we believe that this is a democracy that's worth fighting for. And looks like we're always going to be fighting for it. So got to train the next generation. Stay on the battlefield.
Okay, and again, that's tomorrow at 11 o'clock, and that's the African-American Civil War Museum. I always say it's right near 10th and U, and right near the Green Line. It's right across the street, so you can actually be in both places because you can get to Anacostia on the Green Line as well.
you can cross Anacostia. From one side to the other, yeah, man. Go
absolutely.
Back and forth.
I can tell you it doesn't take long because I do it quite a bit.
It does not take long.
You can get to Anacostia in 15 minutes on that Green Line. So we have been talking with Frank Smith of the African American Civil War Museum, and we're going to leave the last few minutes to our hero of the day and our forever hero, Mr. C.R. Gibbs. The godfather of Black history in D.C. We have a few more minutes before we are done. So, C.R., what would you like to leave with the listeners this morning as we get ready to leave?
Thank you, Joni. I'd like to close out with a quote from the April 26th Christian Recorder, the official organ of the AME Church, when they were describing D.C. emancipation. Sunrise is not far behind. If, taking the wings of the morning, you can poise yourself in the shadowy rim of the horizon and look over and downward a little, you will start back, dazzled by the near approach of the greater glory. O thou King of glory, shall not all be day very soon? Amen. So be it 1,000 times over, that the angels of history and prophecy sit down side by side and each make her record. In other words, the author of this piece saw that what was happening in D.C. was going to happen across the nation. But it started here on April 16, 1862.
Mr. C.R. Gibbs, we are so thankful for you, and it looks like we still have struggles in D.C., as many people feel that Black people perhaps are still being pushed out of the city and perhaps still being locked up a little bit too much. So we still have the struggle is continuing. And again, you can hear C.R. tomorrow at 11 o'clock on, is it 1205 Marion Barry Avenue, that's the address, from 11 to 1. And you can hear him next week. And we'll repeat it again on the show on Monday. You can hear him April 23rd at 6 p.m. Help me out here, C.R., at the library that you often...
Yes, Woodridge Library, April 23rd, 6 o'clock. The hidden story of D.C. emancipation. And learn more about what it was like to live here when we did not have freedom. We don't have it perfectly even today, but it is good that we know what happened, what our ancestors had to deal with. That gives us more focus on dealing with the issues that we have today. I just happened to run across a quote from, of all places, and I have to clean up my table here a little bit better, but John Oliver Killens, the great author, said in the Negro Digest back in 1963, he said, "Negroes are the only people I know who are set apart because of who they are and at the same time are told to forget about it." Well, we're not going to forget. Why should everybody else remember their struggles, their successes, their victories and triumphs, and we just become a non-partner in the history of humanity? We won't do that. And with people like Frank Smith and Joni Eisenberg, with Chuck Hicks and so many others that are griots of this generation that carry this message loud and clear, and we hope we will continue with your help to tell the forgotten stories of the Black presence in the nation's capital and throughout the world.
Thank you, Mr. C.R. Gibbs. You are indeed a blessing. And Chuck, I need to make one announcement from given to me by Lucy Murphy, and that is tonight at the 14th and V Street at Busboys and Poets, there's a last-minute guest. Julian Assange's brother is going to be speaking at 6 p.m. tonight at 14th and V, and many people know why that would be important for you to come. Chuck, if you have a few seconds, otherwise we're done. We want to thank Mike Nasella. We're so happy that he's back in the studio. And thank you, Chuck, and we'll see some of you tomorrow. Going out again with Sweet Honey in the Rock.
The possum on the gum tree couldn't keep his tail as he went climbing on. Abraham has spoken and the message has been sent. The prison doors have opened and out the prisoners went. Join the same army of African descent as we go marching on.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hip us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for jazz and justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
Come home to you'd be so nice. Bye, bye.
The search process for WPFW's next general manager is underway. Successful management searches begin by having conversations with stakeholders to clarify and document expectations for future management. Therefore, WPFW's local station board is inviting all stakeholders to participate in our online survey. To complete the survey, please click the link on WPFW's website. Because we need your input, the deadline for the survey has been extended to Friday, April 12, 2024. Thank you.
ADASI, the African Diaspora Ancestral Commemoration Institute, will host a free DC Emancipation Day program entitled Black Liberation Struggles in Global Africa. Then, and now, on Tuesday, April 16th, 2024, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Enlightened Inc., 1205 Marion Barry Avenue Southeast, the program will commemorate the enslaved ancestors who crossed over the Old Navy Yard Bridge, the precursor to the 11th Street Bridge in Southeast, from enslavement in Maryland to freedom in the District of Columbia after the abolition of slavery in D.C. on April 16, 1862. It will feature esteemed historian C.R. Gibbs and many others. For information, please call 202-505-2896 or visit adasiancestors.org. That's ADACI ancestors.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Miyuki Williams, recently appointed interim general manager. I want to thank each and every one of you who supported WPFW during our recent relocation drive. You are the fuel that keeps us going. We appreciate your generosity and the collaboration of building a better world, one broadcast at a time. Please know we all love you madly.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis has already impacted our lives and what you